that the outpouring of the feelings can be channelized through the Muharram and the Arba'een movement. And any such movement which provides that ground and facilitates that expression of that political ideology and sentiment will certainly be, again, as we were talking about the media, the Indian occupied Kashmir or the Indian administered Kashmir, they will certainly not allow that to happen, because again, Imam Hussein will provide us the opportunity. He will provide the Kashmiris to channelize their aspirations for the sake of nationhood through Imam Hussein's movement, and that is very something which is there for all of mankind. On one hand, we have the Palestinians on the western flank and the eastern flank. We have two oppressed, occupied nations. And till it was a nationalistic movement, we did not have success. They were not successful. Since it became an Islamic movement, and thereby, within the Islamic movement, the movement of Imam Hussein is given a central position, and our feelings and our ideology are channelized through this movement, it will certainly have its results.
Last but not least, sir, are mourners of Imam Hussein in Pakistan allowed to commemorate Imam Hussein's sacrifice freely and safely?
Actually, in Pakistan, the Shia community has been observing Muharram and Safar since the time it became independent from India and before that. As a ritualistic mourning, every year it has been able to carry out this commemoration of Imam Hussein's martyrdom. It has been facilitated by the government, but through the past decades, we have been facing problems at the hands of those who have been incited against the unity of the Ummah, against the Shias residing in Pakistan, at the hands of the stooges of Takfiris and those who have a Wahhabi ideology to stand up against the Shias. So they have been creating problems for Pakistanis, and they have influence in all the institutions, and they do create problems. They do create issues where, for example, over the last few years, FIRs have been registered against many people who are carrying out these ceremonies. But the problem again here, for example, the movement of the Pakistanis towards Iraq this year has been problematic. And again, the Pakistani authorities have not very much facilitated that. The Iraqi authorities have been providing excuses which cannot be accepted fully.
There you have it, Mr. Sayyid Salman Naghavi, Islamic scholar from Pakistan, currently residing in Rome. Thank you for being on the program, Mr. Naghavi. Now, let's see how people have reacted on social media.
Jaigar Malik says, "No caste, no religion, no nationality, no black and white. All are equal here. Yes, this is Karbala, Arba'een Imam Hussein, the world's largest peaceful gathering." Aditya Menon says, "Not surprising that people say in Kashmir every day is Ashura and every town is Karbala." Michelle says, "Even non-Muslims come to visit Imam Hussein in Arba'een. Have you thought to yourself why?"
You're listening to The Subcontinent, broadcast by IRIB English Radio. This weekly program reviews ongoing developments in India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. Listen to The Subcontinent every Monday here on IRIB English Radio.
Russia is one of the most heavily sanctioned countries on earth right now, and Uncle Sam is trying to ensure that no one can help Russia during this time. However, India, which has close ties to the US, is still buying Russian oil at cheap prices.
Under the garb of Ukraine war, the United States and its allies in Europe and Asia quickly moved to impose unprecedented sanctions against the Russian economy. Among the measures they adopted include freezing nearly half of Russia's financial reserves, expelling a number of Russia's largest banks from the SWIFT payment system, and placing an embargo on Russian oil and coal. Not that this has worked, Russia has used sanctions as an opportunity to boost its self-reliance, as the country has offered cheap oil to the world and revenues continue to soar. Russia's current currency reserve surplus swelled to a record high of $167 billion between January and July, more than triple from a year earlier. India and China have been buying Russian crude against the wishes of the U.S. and its allies. To counter this, the U.S. is trying to bring the G7 countries, consisting of the U.K., U.S., Canada, France, Germany, Italy, and Japan, on board to cap Russian oil price, in the hope that Russian oil revenues can be restricted.
The G7 nations, led by the U.S., are trying to apply a price cap on Russian oil sales, and the European Union urged China and India to join the G7 initiative to apply a cap on Russian oil prices. However, China has not complied, and India has remained silent on the matter. The Indian Petroleum Minister, Hardeep Singh, told CNBC that India has a duty to its consumers and that India will buy from Russia or from wherever else they may wish and choose to do so.
Analysts claim that the reason for global inflation and the fuel crisis in Europe are a result also of the policies of the West against Russia. If the Western imperial powers had not sanctioned Russia, global oil prices would have been stable and fuel prices would have been low. Because of the response of the U.S. and EU to the conflict in Ukraine, Russia has now lowered its fuel prices, which in turn pushed other oil-producing countries to lower their prices to compete with Russia. This has ultimately benefited countries like India, which has used its low-cost Russian crude to give a boost to its economy, surpassing the UK to become the fifth largest economy in the world, only behind US, China, Japan, and Germany. Low oil prices have helped India cope with inflated US dollar and global prices. Thus, Indian foreign reserves have been less affected than it would have been had India not made a deal with the Russian Federation. Speaking at GlobeSec, Indian Foreign Minister S.J. Shankar said India is not sitting on the fence and it is entitled to make its own decisions when it comes to policy, rather than siding with other countries.
Now, to have more insight, we are joined by Mrs. Anuradha Mitra Chinoy, adjunct professor at the School of International Relations at Jindal Global University in New Delhi. First of all, welcome to the program, Mrs. Chinoy. Now, how much do you think the response by the U.S. and its allies to the conflict in Ukraine has affected the world so far?
I think this war is really driven by the U.S. and the allies. Ukraine would not have been able to fight back at all and would have collapsed very fast without the support of the huge amount of weapons, the earlier training, strategic suggestions, the intelligence by the US and their allies. Essentially, what I'm saying is there has been a strong element of a proxy war here. Also, of course, the Ukrainian soldiers have put up a great fight. But this would not have been possible without the support of the US and NATO.
Mrs. Chinoy, it's interesting to see what's going on in the world right now. The US and its allies are trying their best to corner Russia, but nothing seems to be working. Now, do you think this new move by the US and its allies to put a cap on Russian oil prices will work?
I don't think so, because just look at the US move on cap on oil prices. Basically, it targets the insurance companies. And the insurance companies have been pressured to say that they will not insure the ships which carry Russian oil. But the Russian oil goes through various ways. Countries like, Russia is calibrating its oil prices accordingly. So they've already negotiated a pretty interesting deal with the Chinese, where they're going to give Russian oil at discounted prices of 50%, but guaranteed till December. So that's one source where Russian oil continues to go regardless of price fluctuations. Similarly, India is getting oil at discounted prices. So I don't know how a cap on prices will impact India. And similarly, several countries of the global south. So then today I just saw that they are sending a shipload even to Greece. So it doesn't look like their efforts, which have not worked so far, will work as far as oil is concerned. The world is oil hungry, especially the developing countries, and also for other Russian commodities. So first, I don't think this is going to really work, and winter is coming. So Europe will have to also rethink, just like Hungary is rethinking, for example, and Bulgaria and some others. But nonetheless, the US wants to have a long war of attrition, of economically decimating Russia. And in the long run, they're going to keep isolating it. So, of course, there will be some impacts, negative impacts on Russia, no matter how much they balance with others. They will be isolated from the overall Western economy.
Last but not least, Mrs. Chinoy, in your assessment, have a cheaper Russian oil bill and, in general, India-Russia trade ties helped India surpass the UK economy?
To some extent, yes, but the fact is that India does have an industrial and manufacturing base, which has, it's a long history of Indian economy which has resulted in this. It's not a one-day or a six-month affair. It is how the Indian economic system has been over so many years, a gradual development. Of course, there's a lot of inequality, but there are also reforms which have helped the economic elite gain a great deal. And in that, oil and also manufacturing and defense production and other production, and the fact that several industries which are moving from China, some of which have come to India. India has also been a beneficiary, as have Vietnam and South Korea. So there have been benefits to that extent, and that's helped all of this together.
On that note, I would like to thank Mrs. Chinoy for being on the program. She is a professor at the School of International Relations. Now let's see how people have reacted on social media.
Martin Jack claims the West's strategy on Ukraine depends on economic sanctions against Russia. Those sanctions aren't working because Russian oil exports to India and China far exceed Western sanctions against Russia. The West still thinks it dominates the world, but China and India prove this is no longer the case. Reuters. India says importing Russian oil part of inflation management. Bloomberg. Russian oil imports now account for 12% of India's total, up from 2% in just a few months.
And that was our episode about Karbala and the sacrifice of Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, which unites the people of the Indian subcontinent. And also how India buying oil from Russia affects the foreign policy and economy of this country. We shall meet again next week. So till then, take great care.
فقه و جورسپروденس is on Islamic knowledge and is ranked among
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech on IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Ayatollah Javadi Amali. Please stay tuned.
بارها و عرضیتون رسید دعاها همشون مقدس و محترمن اما دعای عالمانه
All du'as and supplications are holy and respected. However, the du'a which is recited based on knowledge and research is more precious and brings about more rewards. One such supplication is the one that Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salam taught one of his companions by the name of Az-Zurara. Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salam told Zurara to recite this du'a at the time of occultation of Imam Al-Mahdi Ajjalallah. In the supplication of enlightenment during their occultation, we read, O Allah, make me recognize you, because if you do not make me recognize you, I will not recognize your messenger. O Allah, make me recognize your messenger, because if you do not make me recognize your messenger, I will not recognize your argument. O Allah, make me recognize your argument, because if you do not make me recognize your argument, I will stray off the path of my religion. As you can see, this dua is different from the dua asking for Allah's forgiveness for one's parents or the dua asking for healing the believers. This dua is absolutely based on our knowledge about Allah and His Messenger. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Ayatollah Javadi Amali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.com/en Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye. Thank you.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The death of Queen Elizabeth has raised much discussion about independence of Commonwealth realms. In this regard, we have taken a look at the world media for further details. This is the first part. The death of Queen Elizabeth, the UK's longest reigning monarch for 7 decades, has reignited debates in many of the 15 British Commonwealth realms on whether it is time to replace the British monarch with an elected head of state, which puts the long-term existence of the Commonwealth into question, analysts said, citing growing calls to completely get rid of the remnants of the colonial era and embrace full independence and the decline of Britain's strength. With the Queen's demise, 73-year-old Charles ascended to the British throne and was proclaimed King at St. James Palace in London. He was also pronounced head of state in 14 other Commonwealth realms, including Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and some island nations in the Caribbean and South Pacific. King Charles was proclaimed at a time when Britain faces multiple challenges, including a new government led by Prime Minister Liz Truss, who, as Conservative Party leader, inherits a huge mess she needs to tackle, from an ailing economy to the cost of living crisis, and growing voices in Scotland and Northern Ireland who desire to leave the UK. Analysts noted that Commonwealth realms are at a crossroads. After the Queen's death, many within the realms have revisited the thought of leaving. Choi Hojingjian, director of the Department of European Studies at the China Institute of International Studies, told the Global Times recently. In addition to the UK, the 14 Commonwealth realms are Antigua and Barbuda, Australia, the Bahamas, Belize, Canada, Grenada, Jamaica, New Zealand, Papua New Guinea, St. Kitts and Nevis, St. Lucia, St. Vincent and Grenadines, Solomon Islands, and Tuvalu. The king's role as monarch of these countries is generally symbolic, and he will not be directly involved in governing, as the British monarch is a head of the state, not head of government. While commemorating Queen Elizabeth, Republican debates have been pushed to the fore in many of the Commonwealth realms. The Guardian reported that in the hours after Queen's death was announced, Republican debate was dramatically re-enlivened, and the Australian Greens leader Adam Bent tweeted that Australia must move forward, we need to become a republic. Reuters reported recently that New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern said no immediate steps will be taken to achieve unification, but the nation may eventually become a republic. I've never sensed the urgency. There is so many challenges we face. This is a large, significant debate. Don't think it's one that would or should occur quickly, Ardern told reporters, adding, I do believe that is where New Zealand will head in time. I believe it's likely to occur in my lifetime, but I don't see it as a short-term measure or anything that is on the agenda anytime soon, she said. Campaigns for independence from the British monarchy have been underway in Australia and New Zealand for years. The Queen's death means the end of an era, with more people in Australia and other Commonwealth realms questioning the legitimacy and necessity of a monarch, Cheng Hong, President of the Chinese Association of Australian Studies and Director of the Australian Studies Center at East China Normal University, told the Global Times. Other Commonwealth realms, especially island nations in South Pacific and Caribbean that have suffered colonial rule, may be striving to divorce with the Commonwealth and rid themselves of the scars left by the British colonialists, analysts said. Just after Charles was proclaimed king recently, Antigua and Barbuda Prime Minister Gaston Browne told ITV News that the Caribbean country will hold a referendum on transitioning to a republic and removing King Charles at head of state within the next 3 years. Antigua and Barbuda used to be a British colony. It gained independence from the UK in 1981, but remained as one of the 15 countries where the British monarchy is head of state. However, observers also said that the breakaway process from the Commonwealth will not happen overnight. There are uncertainties in the referendum process in some countries, as the UK has taken the Queen's death as an opportunity to continue the influence of the monarchy while emphasizing a sense of closeness and identity. From Barbados and Jamaica to Belize, many Caribbean countries' willingness to leave the Commonwealth shows their pursuit of political independence and modern development. The British monarchy is a historical remnant of a colonial era, and it will face more challenges in the modern world. Zhu Zhuwei, an expert on Latin American studies at the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences, told the Global Times. The divorce trend is inevitable, as the people in these countries are fighting to defend their dignity and seeking full decolonization. After declaring independence, Caribbean nations have developed stronger relations with the US, China, and other countries. This is also an impetus for these countries to seek more political independence. Coy, expert from SCIS, noted that people from former colonial countries see colonialism as a sin that harms local residents and sabotages their cultures, and most resent it. However, some elites in these countries maintain close bonds with the UK, as their interests are closely aligned. But the landscape is changing with the decline in the UK's strength, Coy noted. The UK no longer has that much to offer to these countries, while people's resentment toward colonialism is rising as the concept itself is in conflict with the world's general trend of democratic countries. Moreover, since the UK is at the core of the Commonwealth realms, if it fails to deliver any actual benefits to others, either politically or economically, the realms may consider becoming a republic and even discuss leaving the Commonwealth altogether. Seeing the British Empire gradually reduced to a blind follower of the US in international politics, and its domestic politics becoming fragmented and divided, Commonwealth realms must consider what they can get from the system. Time wrote, like many of Britain's former colonies, Ireland has had a complicated relationship with both Britain and its monarchy, one uniquely shaped by a geographical proximity that created intimate but not necessarily friendly ties both economically and culturally. The death of Queen Elizabeth raised much discussion about the British monarchy's relationship with its former colonies. In the Republic of Ireland, which gained its independence in 1921, the response was respectful and somewhat muted, consistent with complex history. Ireland endured 8 centuries of political and military intervention by its neighbor before finally gaining its independence. But Queen Elizabeth remained head of state in the six countries that make up Northern Ireland, which is still part of the UK, and a point of friction for 7 years. During the violent period of late 1960s to late 1990s, known as the Troubles, more than 3,700 people lost their lives, including the uncle of the Queen's husband, Lord Louis Mountbatten, an icon of British imperialism, was killed in 1979 by Irish Republic Army bomb.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we discuss your problems, questions you have regarding the Islamic upbringing of your children. A child is like a white paper on which you can write good things or bad things. Entire personality of a child is developed by the parents, by the upbringing they do. And in this program, we try to provide all the necessary information that is required to bring up your child in the best possible way. The answers of your questions are based upon Noble Quran and the narrations of Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, and his purified progeny. Today near our studio, we have had the pleasure to invite Professor Salman Naqavi, who is a faculty member of Al Mustafa University and researcher in the Hawza Ilmiya of Qom. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome.
Thank you very much.
Oh, well, as the world is changing at a very, very fast pace, beyond the way we can even imagine, here there are so many things that can attack our emotions, that can actually change our emotional state, and that can actually play a very important role of how we think, how we deal with these emotions. So what about this emotional development? How do we see at this emotional development from Islamic perspective, especially when it comes to the upbringing?
Yes, as we were talking about the knowledge aspect of the trainer, of the educator, especially the parents, we need to also emphasize upon the emotional aspects of child bringing, upbringing. Because of course, in the previous session, you mentioned the issue of Karbala, the sacrifice of Karbala. There's a very important lesson for us there. Because, look, when we're talking about child upbringing, training a child in the Islamic way, it is very essential, as in all other relationships, the aspect, the issue of emotions and feelings, the love that has to be given to the child, and one naturally gives that,
yeah,
has that love, that intense love that one has for one's child. So emotions, their relationship with the thought process.
Okay.
How is that? I mean, some people would say, look, Karbala was an explosion of emotions.
Okay.
Of love. Of the love for Imam Hussein, for the will to sacrifice oneself, and it's beyond one's intellectual understanding.
Yeah,
I mean, one cannot reason and make a reasonable justification based on our intellectual understanding that why should one do that?
Yeah.
So there's a conflict between feelings and emotions and intellectual and rational thinking.
Yeah.
Apparently it seems so. But that's not the case.
All
when
right.
we talk about Karbala,
mm-hmm.
when we see the immense manifestation of love and sacrifice and ithar for the sake of wilaya, it's based on a very sound reasoning.
All right.
Karbala, Imam Hussein's mission, has a very solid intellectual reasonable justification.
All right. So as you mentioned that there is Karbala even today, be that in Yemen, be that in Afghanistan, be that in Palestine, be that in Kashmir, be that in Nigeria, or any other part of the world, there are oppressed people all over around, we see. You're trying to say that looking at all these wars, looking at oppressed people and going to help them, there's not only emotion that plays a very great role, there's also sound reasoning, as there was in Karbala. How it was reasoning, how it was a rational thinking, what was behind, I'll ask you that after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned to IRIB English Radio.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. We're talking about the emotional development that needs to be developed in children. And so far, we reached so many points. And we were giving an example of Karbala, how to learn lessons of upbringing from the story of Karbala itself. And apparently, it seems that it was just a story. It was all the heroes of Karbala were actually guided by emotions, but Professor Naqavi, you said it was based on sound reasoning as well.
It cannot be otherwise, because without that sound reasoning, rationality behind it, all of that sacrifice would have gone in vain.
Yeah.
So again, we have to look at the bigger picture. The bigger picture is monotheism, is tawheed, is the concept of unity of Allah Almighty.
Yeah.
Coming down to earth through wilaya.
Yeah.
And the implementation of wilaya.
Yeah.
And the implementation of wilaya is based on the fact that those who are worthy of becoming the authorities, the ulul amr, they should become the true sovereigns of the ummah. The true leaders and the imams of the ummah. So worthiness, competency, not being knowledgeable, having the proper skills and knowledge to become the leaders is the important thing.
Yeah.
In our concept of wilaya, anyone who has that capability, has that competency, has that eligibility, is the wali, is the sovereign, has the authority. Whether people support him or don't support him.
Okay.
If the support comes, then the wali has the opportunity to implement that authority.
Okay.
Just as we see in the case of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, may Allah have peace upon him. He was a competent authority of Islam. He was a faqih. He was knowledgeable. He was pious.
Mm-hmm.
He had the leadership qualities that are required to lead the ummah. And he also had the honor to be able to have people support him and facilitate him in being able to implement that authority. And that is because of the lessons from Karbala, the lessons the Ummah in Iran learned from Karbala, they implemented in Iran.
All right.
So, but at the time of Imam Hussein, Imam Hussein, in a very bigger spectrum, was the person who had the authority, had the eligibility to become the leader of the Ummah, but the whole of mankind.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, the support was not there.
Yeah.
So that support had to be garnered. People had to be made to realize the fact that, look, when you are not taking sides and remaining aloof, that is against the concept of wilaya and tawheed.
Yeah.
If you support Yazid, then certainly you will go to hell. True. And even if you remain aloof and neutral,
yeah,
then you are also bound to go to hell.
Yeah.
So support the wilaya. It is your duty. It is your responsibility.
Yeah.
Today, when we talk about the Islamic Ummah, when we talk about the state of affairs in the Islamic Ummah,
yeah,
we don't have capable leaders at the realm of affairs.
Exactly.
In many places.
Unfortunately. We'll talk more on that after a short break, dear listeners. Stay tuned to IRIB English Radio.
Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam said, Allah will be merciful to his servant for his intense love for his child.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. We're talking about parents as educators and a certain set of knowledge they need to have. And once we discuss the different sorts of knowledge, now we have reached a point that parents need to make an emotional development first among themselves and now also in their children. Yes.
Yes, we were trying to draw this lesson from Karbala, that there was an immense expression of emotions there.
Yeah.
But it was based on rationality. And the rationality, when we come to the bigger picture, we understand that justification. Yeah. The justification was that Imam Hussein saw upon himself that if he does not give this sacrifice, people would not be able to wake up to the fact that they are making a big mistake history will judge them in a very negative sense.
Important thing is that he did not put hands in falls. It's a very big lesson for our children. Like, even if you're invited someday to accept pay allegiance to some false leader, you should give your head but not your hand.
Exactly. So that was the lesson. But again, today, what we want to the lesson we want to understand today is just now that there's a great nexus between understanding thoughts and feelings.
Yeah.
And that is what we as parents have to understand also, that our emotions should be expressed in the form of our behavior based on a strong,
rational basis. Yeah.
So expression of emotions, it should not be because of our internal difficulties.
Okay.
It should be based on rational issues.
Okay.
So the moment I start, God forbid, cursing my child because I'm angry at him because he's not taken care of something.
Yeah.
Even he was supposed to pray for Allah Almighty and he's not praying on time.
Yeah.
And I start abusing and cursing and hitting. Why aren't you praying? Why aren't you praying?
Yeah.
So that form of behavior and this expression of these emotions is uncalled for.
Yeah.
It has no justification. It has no rational basis.
True.
If you want him or her to pray on time, properly, it's for the sake of Allah. Now you want to make him do that, then
you yourself pray on time. When he sees you continuously doing that, he won't be in need of much lectures or pressures from your side. Well, thank you so much for being with us in the session, inshallah. We'll talk more about these topics in the upcoming sessions. Thank you for being with us for now. Thank you so much to our listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. In case you want to listen again, you can go back to our official website. That's www.parstoday.com. You can go to the tab Call of Islam, and out there you can search Islamic Upbringing and you'll find all our episodes over there. Thank you so much for being with us once again. And in case you have any questions, you have any issues, you have anything you want to ask about the Islamic upbringing of your children, you can feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Until another session, fi amanallah, God bless you all.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returns upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. Islam solves all of our problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah.
In the limelight.
Iran's full membership at Shanghai Cooperation Organization shows that U.S. policies toward the Islamic Republic have failed. The four decades-long struggle by the West to isolate Iran became ineffective after Iran's foreign minister signed a memorandum of obligations, a key step in becoming a full member of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, SCO, in a recent meeting with Secretary General of the SCO, Zhang Ming. In this regard, we have taken a look at the world media in order to know more about the developments in this summit. Stay tuned for more. According to Global Times, Chinese President Xi Jinping delivered an important speech on Friday, September 16th, at the summit of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, SCO, in Samarkand, Uzbekistan, emphasizing the need to follow the guidance of the Shanghai spirit as they forge ahead. President Xi pointed out that under new conditions, the SCO, as an important constructive force in international and regional affairs, should keep itself well-positioned in the face of changing international dynamics, ride on the trend of the times, strengthen solidarity and cooperation, and build a closer SCO community with a shared future. The speech received an enthusiastic reaction and resonance at the scene of the meeting, becoming one of the most closely watched and essential parts of the SCO summit. At the summit, leaders of the SCO member states signed the Samarkand Declaration, expressing their unanimous attitude of ruling out bloc, ideologically charged and confrontational approaches to current international and regional development issues, and reaffirming the importance of promoting cooperation in the development of international relations of a new kind in the spirit of mutual respect, equality, and mutually beneficial cooperation, as well as in building a community with a shared future for mankind. In this process, China's role is evident to all. The Global Development Initiative, GDI, and Global Security Initiative, GSI, put forward by the Chinese leader were a response to the concerns of regional countries and have become an increasingly broad and firm consensus in the international community. In stark contrast to the spirit of the SCO, the US-led West is trying to build a Cold War-style alliance based on ideological criteria, leading to the wave of counter-globalization and confrontational spirit that the world is now experiencing. Deng Kao, Secretary General of the China Center for SCO Studies, told the Global Times recently, "The US-led West is now putting extreme pressure on Russia while not reducing its containment of China," Deng said. "The geopolitical stakes are at an unprecedentedly high level. Against this backdrop, the sense of crisis and uncertainty facing the vast majority of developing countries has clearly increased. Countries that have not entered the West small clique have attached great importance to this visit of President Xi and are clearly and eagerly looking forward to his visit," Deng said. "This visit is believed to bring confidence and hope to the world," he said, "because they saw China's development and are more in agreement with the ideas and propositions put forward by China. At the summit, Iran officially became a full SCO member. Asia Times also reported negotiations to build a new pipeline designed to transport annually 50 billion cubic meters of gas from Russia to China through Mongolia are expected to close soon after the three countries' leaders met in Uzbekistan. Chinese President Xi Jinping, Russian President Vladimir Putin, and Mongolian President Ukna Kramslake held a face-to-face meeting in Samarkand on the sideline of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization SCO summit. The three leaders agreed to actively move forward on the Mongolian section of the China-Russia natural gas pipeline known as Power of Siberia 2. Russian Deputy Prime Minister Alexander Novak was quoted as saying by Russia's TASS news agency that the Power of Siberia 2 deal would close in the near future. The progress was made recently the same day when Xi and Putin held a bilateral meeting to discuss economic partnership and geopolitical issues, including Ukraine and Taiwan matters. Also, Al Jazeera English wrote, Iran has signed a memorandum of obligations to become a permanent member of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization SCO, a Central Asian security body, the Iranian foreign minister said. Hossein Amir Abdullahian wrote on social media, by signing the document for full membership of the SCO, now Iran has entered a new stage of various economic, commercial, transit and energy cooperation.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent. and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.